Right, recording started. So, hi Dean. it's our fourth meeting now. Great to have you again. Thank you for joining. And I just tell the audience we just kind of chit chat. What shall we speak about? And I suggested let's talk about the Israeli connection to the pyramid, to the world pyramid of control. And I asked you if it's all right, and you started to answer, and I just said, hang on, let's record. So here we are, and you were just about to answer me about the Israeli connection to the world pyramid of control. Go ahead.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, Shai, as
Sure.
always. I think, we always have to remember about this global oligarchy, and this is the key. And this is a structure that's been in place for thousands of years, going back to Samaria, Babylon, Carthage, Tyre, Rome, Venice, now the city of London. And this feudalist oligarchy, they're feudalists, so they look at us as cattle. And we're just expendable, dispensable. The same with nation states. Nation states are to be used for the purposes of the feudalists and then discarded when it's convenient. And so, I live in the United States, which I used to call the belly of the beast until I knew better. And we go around the world, we pay, everybody pays in all this tax money to basically fund this military industrial complex that's basically at the head of it is like Lockheed Martin and British Aerospace and these crown corporations that are actually owned by, not by America even, but by this crown, which is lodged in the city of London. And so, when you go traveling and as an American, you always have to explain this to people. A lot of people give you a hard time. And I know it's the same for Israelis. Because of the role that Israel has been assigned in the geopolitical scheme of this feudalist oligarchy. And that role is basically to, I think, defend the oil interests of the Rothschilds and Rockefellers. Rockefellers aren't Jewish. It doesn't have anything to do with religion. They're trying to increasingly tell us it does and pit, Jews and Christians and Muslims against each other. And as you can see with the New Zealand bombing and the Sri Lanka bombings and the bombing of the, I think it was sabotage at the Notre Dame Cathedral. And the very same day, there was a fire at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the very same time. So the whole idea is to, and the Illuminati feudalists are behind all this stuff. And the Islamists that bomb the things in Sri Lanka, they're not Muslims, they're just well-paid mercenaries for British intelligence, CIA. So it really doesn't have anything to do with religion. But with Israel, you had the Balfour Declaration of 1917. And 5 years later, you had the Treaty of Jeddah, which basically established Saudi Arabia. And this was at a time when the British were having a lot of trouble in the Middle East, World War I. Ottoman Turks were giving them a hard time. So they had to establish these beachheads in the area. And when I say the British, I really mean the crown and the city of London. Because again, it's not the British people either. It's not has nothing to do with the people of the UK, the people of Israel, or the people of America. It has everything to do with how our nation states are being used by this global oligarchy. So they set up Israel with the Balfour Declaration. It was written by Sir Walter Rothschild to Arthur Balfour. These guys were all sitting together on this round table. And the business roundtable of 19, I think 19 or something. This is what established the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, and a lot of the, a lot of these secret societies that basically do the bidding of the banker oligarchs. And so, this was written in 1917. So the crown are white supremacist Nazis at their core. They're eugenicists. I mean, they hate everybody, including poor white people. They really hate brown and black people. And so they had to have a way to engineer the creation of Israel through the Balfour Declaration, which was already signed. And the way they did that because you have to remember, Palestine was administered by the British, you know, until 1947. It was British Palestine.
Yeah.
And they were very brutal to the Palestinians. And they needed a way. So this is where you get into how the crown supported Hitler.
But just to clarify, when you say they were very cruel to the Palestinians, we are not talking about Palestinians as today. We're talking about whoever lived back then in Palestine, which is a name given by the Romans to this part of the land, and whoever lived here were actually Jewish descendants, like that many generations they stayed here in Israel, even after the expelled to, I forgot now the translation to do it, but to Rome, for example. So a lot of Hebrew people or Jewish people were taken away to walk back there, but some stayed here. And those that you refer to as Palestinians are Arabs or Palestinian Arabs that used to live in Israel, and Jewish, Palestinian Jewish Jews or that used to live in Palestine, what was then Palestine, and became to get to know Israel and not really Palestine. Sorry for my English, I got lost in translation, but I just wanted to clarify it because it's quite a loaded word here in Israel when we say Palestine, but you're referring to Palestine as the Roman did when they called this land Palestine.
Yeah. So and the British.
Yes, and the British, and of course. Go on. Sorry.
British administered Palestine. That's just what it was.
Yes.
You know, that's what it was. But
sure.
So anyway, they had to create this pretext, I think. And so they got behind Hitler, and you know, ExxonMobil got behind Hitler. You know, Bayer, the modern day Bayer that owns Monsanto, got behind Hitler. E.G. Farben.
E.G. Farben,
Many of the princes, the dukes, and the crowns of Europe got behind Hitler, including Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, the House of Orange. He was an avid Nazi Party member. Henry Dieterding, a Royal Dutch Shell, avid Nazi Party member. Prince Philip, avid supporter of the Nazis. Many of these British aristocracy were supporting Hitler because he represented this eugenics thing that they developed long before Hitler.
Sure. It started in England, actually. The eugenic movement started in England.
That's right. It started in England. And it started with the royal families and the crown, because they have these special royal bloodlines.
Yeah.
And this is where they get this idea they have divine right of kings.
Yeah.
And whether or not this is because they have Anunnaki blood or some kind of hybrid alien blood, we don't know. But anyway, they think they're really special. And so that makes all of us sort of expendable. And that's what, you know, sets them into this obsession with overpopulation. And especially, I would say, with darker skinned people, definitely around the world. Now, so Hitler, of course, his thing was, go after the Jews, go after the gypsies, go after the Slavs, go after the communists.
Yeah.
And all
also,
of these people.
Also, he went after the Freemasons. I mean, he also tried to...
At the later stages of the game, he did. And what happened with Hitler, and this is all in my Big Oil book if people want to read in depth about it, but what happened with Hitler was, at first, he was in the pocket of the Freemasons. He was all into this, you know, he had the Fool Society and, you know, Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society was a big influence on him, the Vril Society.
Yes.
All these societies, which are essentially sort of part of the Freemason, Luciferian way of looking at the world. And he got really into that stuff. And he was into black magic, and he was said he was in contact with, you know, the Shambhala giants who live in the Himalayan mountains. Yeah. And he, you know, he created this flying disc. So maybe he got some information. When you go to the dark side, you get information, you get technology, it seems like, from these dark entities. So anyway, but you're right. At the end, when he found out what was going on, when he found out it was the crown actually behind him, and it wasn't some populist, thing that he was doing by himself, he started to realize he wasn't really driving the car.
Mm.
And who was driving the car were the British Freemasons.
So you're saying, so hang on.
Freemasons.
Then he cracked down on the Freemasons. But what you're saying now, sorry, that's first time I hear it. So at first, he didn't know that he was funded by them, by these forces. He thought he actually driving the car, driving Germany into victory and world domination and etc.
Yeah.
And only later on he discovered that he was actually being funded by other forces.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, Rudolf Hess, who was, I believe, his Secretary of State, it was a really weird incident where he actually, towards when Hitler, it was right when Hitler had this epiphany that the crown was behind all this mischief, he had his Secretary of State, Rudolf Hess, parachute into the Duke of Wellington's castle in London. Because at the time there was war, there was bombs, so it's dangerous. You couldn't really cross the border, couldn't go across the channel. So he actually parachuted into this guy's castle and he said, look, we know what's going on. We figured it out. And you guys need to, you know, back off. And really, they didn't. And so that's when he started going after not just the Freemasons. He started also exposing the wealthy bankers, some of whom were Jewish and some of them who weren't.
Right.
But this happened at the end. And it's just kind of like if you think about Noriega. Okay, Noriega, you know, he worked. He came to power probably not knowing that it was the CIA that was backing him.
Yes.
He assassinated El Qasim, who was a socialist, very, very hard leftist, who had made communal farms and nationalized a lot of property and helped, you know, just help people. And so they took him out in 64, and CIA handler for Saddam Hussein was Bruce O'Dell. And he didn't know it. And then they kind of got behind him. And then see what happened with Saddam was the people of Iraq have always been communists. The Communist Party ever since the mid-50s when they were the first Arab nation to get rid of their king, their crown.
Right.
So all these crowns are connected. And they got rid of their crown in 56. And they nationalized their oil industry and took it away from BP and Shell and these big outfits that are owned by the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and so forth. And so they set the example in the Middle East for others to follow, which they did. And that's really a big reason why they took them out, you know. But Saddam at the end had taken a hard left turn. And that's why they took him out. And it's the same with Noriega. Noriega in Panama, they used the guy to run drugs. He was a terrible person. But at first he was a populist, and then at the end he kind of went back to his populism, and they asked him to invade Nicaragua with his defense force and take out the Sandinistas and help fight them with the Contras, and he refused, and that's when they took him out.
Right.
So that's when they took Hitler out. But also what happened, and this is the important part going back to the Balfour Declaration, was by doing this Jewish extermination, it gave the Rothschilds a pretext for the formation of Israel and to send all these Jewish families out of Europe, you know, uproot them, put them in harm's way, really, and to send them into this predestined place where they'd signed this treaty 30 years before that. So, and the guy that was Hitler's immigration chief was named Rosenbaum or Rosenstein. He was Jewish. And the thing was, you had to have $1,000 to pay this guy Rosenstein, and then you could go to Israel. So it wasn't all the Jews. It was the wealthy Jews. And this is where I think the sort of the entrenched part of like Zionism, where, you know, it's very much controlled. And so, you know, you have to look at these people just like you would look at like Netanyahu, just like you would have to look at the Trumps or the Clintons as being sort of lieutenants for the oligarchy.
Yeah, well, that's not,
but, you know, I don't know.
That's the way I look at it, although some people maybe not, but at least my crowd, my audience, that's the way he looks at Netanyahu and those who are in office, taking place in office. They're just lieutenants. They're serving a greater power than them, and they are like, I wouldn't say even representatives, because they've been chosen to run businesses here for someone else. And you were saying, well, a couple of things. One thing is, I wanted to ask, what is the actual reason, according to your research, what is the actual reason to establish Israel? If you can just pinpoint it or just elaborate a bit more, because I don't think it was that clear. At least, well, for me it's all right, but just for the audience, what was the actual reason to establish Israel, and what's the relation between Judaism and Zionism?
Yeah, well, the reason to establish Israel is to serve as a geopolitical outpost in the Middle East to protect oil interests, and also to stir up the Arabs and to keep them divided, you know, because, you know, the Mossad had a very big role in the Iran-Iraq war, for example, and they wanted to destroy both countries, and the CIA did too, and so did British intelligence. But it's just their outpost. It's the same with Saudi Arabia. Again, it has nothing to do with Jews or Muslims or anything. It just has to do with, okay, we can control this certain Zionist clique in this country, which, you know, the wealthy elite Zionist crowd. Mm-hmm. We can control the king of Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud. Again, having nothing to do with the Saudi Arabian people either, who are persecuted, as are Israeli people, as are all the people in the world. You know, and then they have to put up with all the bombing from Hamas, which, by the way, Hamas was given operating licenses by Israel and was funded by the Saudis.
Sure.
And I think, I continue to think that basically the Muslim Brotherhood is behind Hamas, which is the House of Saud. They're also behind Louis Farrakhan, this crazy guy who divides people over here. They're behind all the Islamism, all the Wahhabism.
But again, the Muslim Brotherhood, it's a CIA operation. I mean,
It's a CIA Mossad operation, because as long as they can keep Hamas doing these crazy bombings, they can keep Israel and Palestine from having peace with each other. And that's what they want, because it doesn't work if you have peace in the Middle East. You know, as this Ralph, I can't remember his last name, he's the CEO of Chevron, and he said the key to the Middle East, the control of oil in the Middle East, is to keep it stirred up. Yeah. And that's what they have to do. They have to have conflict in the Middle East all the time between countries, because they have to be able to, you know, push down the price of oil, raise the price of oil, keep OPEC from being disunified, which it is. The Saudis control OPEC. There's no, I mean, they have total hegemony over OPEC, so that, you know, there's a lot of countries like Algeria, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq that want usually higher oil prices.
Sure.
And the Saudis will always come in for the bankers, because they're a crown. They're a crown. Look, and they will push the price down. They call them a swing producer. But that they're just basically a lackey that controls the valve of oil and the price of oil. And then, of course, in return, they buy U.S. Treasury bonds, 30-year Treasury bonds. Yeah. And the same can be said of the elite of Israel. They invest in Wall Street. They prop the U.S. economy up, the British economy up, which the crown controls. And these elites are really the same crowd. I mean, you know that finally what's going on is the elites in Saudi Arabia and Israel are sort of coming out of the closet and they're forming this alliance. But it's always kind of been like that.
Right.
And it was always just kind of this kabuki theater, because who the crown really, you know, feared were people like Gaddafi and people like, Ben Medin in Algeria.
Right.
And of course, the Iranians, because they're more nationalist and they're more left-leaning, and they don't play ball with the crown. They don't allow the Rothschilds to own their central bank. They don't have a bank Lumi or a bank Kaplanim like Israel has, which is connected to Barclays, which is, you know, which is part of the crown mechanism. Barclays is one of the most powerful banks in the world.
Sure.
And Oppenheimer's and Rothschilds own it. And they don't have HSBC or Standard and Chartered like Dubai has, which again is owned by the crown, owned by the same crown. So you just have to look at it like there's this global feudalist oligarchy, centuries old, and they just manipulate countries. And I think that, basically they've put Israeli citizens in harm's way. They've put Saudi citizens in harm's way. They've put American citizens in harm's way, because we always get the bad reputation for what we do around the world with our troops. America's the military wing, and that's, we're the big military wing, and the Israeli military is sort of a subcontractor of that or something, but also specializing in that region and specializing definitely in black operations and false flags. But it's just the elite. And so what we have to do as people is just unify, tell these truths, clarify all this stuff, and quit saying, oh, the Jews or all the Muslims or all the Christians or all the Israelis or all the all the Palestinians or all the Saudis or all the Americans. No, we're all just citizens of the world. And then there's a global oligarchy. And that's who we have to start talking about. You're going to fix it.
You, a couple of minutes ago, you were talking about, well, basically, and I also read your post about it, about the fact that the next war will be Muslims against Christians. I mean, Islam against Christianity. Can you just elaborate about it?
Well, there's this letter from Albert Pike to Giuseppe Mazzini.
Yeah.
And it was written about 1850. Right. Something like that. So Albert Pike was the founder of Freemasonry in the United States, or sort of ran it for a long time. He was also the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and he was instrumental, because he was a general, he was instrumental in prosecuting the genocide of the Native Americans here.
Mm.
So he's a real peach of a guy, you know. And he wrote a letter to Giuseppe Mazzini, who is a 33rd degree Freemason, and basically founded the Mafia, what we know of as the Mafia. In fact, the word mafia is an acronym in Italian for his name. And I don't, it's like Mazzini, something about Burns, Lutz, and something, but that's mafia.
I see, yes.
I can't, you know, it's in my book, but I don't remember the Italian.
All right, nice one, but I didn't know.
It's amazing, this guy actually had the mafia is named after this guy, and he's also a Freemason, so there you go. Because these people are the same people. The mafia and the bankers are the same people. This is also something people don't understand. And the reason a lot of them are Italian is because, well, a lot of the bloodlines and a lot of the Illuminati are Italians, because they lived in Venice for a long time, and they still live there. They do their geopolitical operation out of London, but a lot of the most elite and richest families actually live in northern Italy and the Benelux countries. So yeah, and then so that he wrote this letter, and he said there's going to be these three world wars, and he described them. You know, World War One was going to be this thing to basically take down the Germans, and it would be this kind of advance of the empire to Central Europe. World War Two would be this thing between capitalism and communism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, out of it would come this sort of new world order thinking, or whatever. Eventually, and then the third war would be a religious war between Muslims and Christians and Jews also. And I think, you know, the first two are pretty much what he said, and this was 1850. He wrote this well before either of those wars.
Impressive. I mean,
impressive.
Just to show that it was planned and not just happened by chance or coincidence.
Yeah, they plan these things centuries ahead of time. It's amazing. That's what happens when you're so rich and you have all this time in your hand, this resource. And it just looks to me like this is what's going on now. And then Samuel Huntington came along in 1973, and he wrote a paper for the Trilateral Commission. It was called A Crisis of Democracy, The Coming Clash of Civilizations.
Right, yes.
And it described this coming war between Muslims and Christians. And at that time, you know, there really wasn't that. There wasn't that. So he was projecting what the Trilateral Commission wanted to happen. And again, the Trilateral Commission is another one of these secret societies founded by David Rockefeller and this Zbigniew Brzezinski, and it includes Japan. And so it's the Trilateral is, you know, North America, Europe, and Japan, basically. And they just, you know, that's what they said was going to happen. Well, of course, 9/11 catalyzed it. 9/11, which was done by the Crown. Through Securicom, the company that had the World Trade Center security contract that shut down the elevator shafts on certain floors in the 6 weeks going up to it. Deutsche Bank sold the put options, or bought the put options on all the reinsurance companies and all the airlines that were involved, and made a lot of money when their stocks tanked. And there was this thing where this Buzzy Krongard, he was like number three at CIA, and all of a sudden he became CEO of Deutsche Bank. And that is, anyway, the CIA was heavily into Deutsche Bank for whatever reason. You have to remember, the CIA and Mossad, they're really working for the Crown. They were put in your country and my country to keep us under the thumb of the Crown. And that's what, and they work for the bankers. And when they get to a high enough level in those agencies, they know that. But of course, the grunts don't know that. They think they're, you know, they wave their flag and they think they're helping Israel or helping America, but they're not. So that really you know, with the whole story about these 19 hijackers, which is the most ridiculous story you could ever have told. They even to the point where they said they found Muhammad Atta's passport at the bottom of this building two or whatever. And then, of course, the lady on Fox News announcing that Building 7 came down 30 minutes before.
Yes, I saw it. Sure, sure.
And this is where all the Enron documents were stored. And there was a lot of investigations into the bad guys going on. The papers were there. And so they just took it down. And but anyway, what came out of that, as we now know, was the neocons. Well, the Patriot Act, which took away Americans' constitution, basically, and also just this never-ending war with Muslim countries. Mm. And this is the seven wars that Wesley Clark talks about, and six of them have already happened, you know. Mm. Syria, Afghanistan, Libya,
Iraq, Egypt.
Yeah.
Iraq.
Anyway,
Afghanistan.
The only one left is basically Iran. Iran's the only country that they haven't taken out yet, and that's what they look like they want to do now. But meanwhile, you have this crackdown on just average Muslims in the United States. You know, they're all terrorists now. And you have this animosity. Definitely a lot of people in this country are anti-Muslim. In the Muslim world, you also have a lot of Muslims who saw, you know, just continue to see what they think America is doing, but what in fact the crown is doing. So they hate, or they think Christians are doing. And they're just engineering this kind of fake crusade, you know. And it just really does look like it's. I mean, maybe we're already into World War III, and it's just this kind of slow moving war, you know, almost, because it's just been endless permanent war ever since 9/11. So anyway, what Pike forecast told us was coming, what Huntington told us was coming, two elitists working for the bankers, it came about. And I think this next third world war is coming about, whether we're already into it or whether the big one's going to come when we clash with Iran, I don't know. But it sure seems like there's just a lot of hatred in the air. And this is what the feudalists live off of. They live off division. They live off people fighting each other. Sure. The little people need to fight each other. So you divide them along religions. You divide them along genders. You divide them along, you know, environmentalists or loggers. You divide them along, nations, you know, nation states. My country's better than your country, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they just live on this stuff, and people just got to snap out of it. They just got to quit buying into this crap. And they got to realize that it's all being orchestrated. It's all being orchestrated by these powers, and they have all the resources necessary to do it. And so,
I'll throw in the immigration. I mean, Europe as well as, well, to a degree, the U.S., but I can say also it's true for Israel. A lot of legal and illegal immigrants, refugees, whatever titles they may have, and it's not to put them down and their situation, but I'm just saying this is all a big maneuver by the crown or by those who are in control in order to confuse the people and create these clashes within the nations, within the countries, just to make them weaker and to make it easier to put in a military force or some sort of military control in order. And by the way, I just add to this the fact that in, let's say, in the past 5-10 years, the uniforms of police force in certain countries have been changed, and they are very, very similar. So the police force in the US and the UK and Israel, as well as other countries, they look at like it's the same police force. I mean, the uniforms are the same. They are all very dark uniforms. The equipment is the same equipment. It already starts to look like an international police force or a one world government police force, etc. And these are just small, simple signs that one can just look at and wonder why it's there, you know. But it's only if one is curious enough to wonder or ponder about these things, because most people are stuck and glued to their phone or newspaper or TV. Still, although we are in 2019, and there's so much stuff out there. You've been written 5 books, and there's so much information out there, and most people still turn on the TV at 8 o'clock in the evening to swallow the next big lie coming out of the big screen. And this is a shame, and I hope people wake up to realize that it's all just a big masquerade or kabuki theater, like you just said before. I wanted to go back to the second question I asked about Zionism and Judaism. If you can, if you know anything about it, if you can just, you know, give us like your Dean Henderson's intro into the subject of Judaism versus Zionism, if it is at all there is a versus in between these two worlds. Go on.
Yeah, I really don't think there's any actual connection.
Yeah.
Because I think Zionism was creation again of the crown. And I think Theodor Herzl was one of their agents. And I think it was all about establishing this gendarme in the Middle East to control the oil. If you look where Israel sits, very strategic location. Mm-hmm. You know, on the Red Sea, at the mouth of the, you know, the Suez Canal's nearby, mm-hmm. and the Persian Gulf's nearby, and the shipping lanes. And I found out an interesting thing about Israel from Jordan Maxwell. He said, mm-hmm. This, if you look at the biggest continent in the world by far, or the biggest land mass, it's the Eurasian land mass,
sure.
which includes the subcontinent of India,
sure.
and go all the way down. And if you take and you cut that in half, and you run across through it, right in the middle is Israel.
Yes, I know.
Right in the middle.
Yes.
So it's always been a very important strategic location for world trade and for shipping lanes. And so it's not just oil, you know, it's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Also, I mean, you think about Africa and jewelry, I mean, yeah. diamonds and drugs and
right.
and fabrics and silk and tea and sugar and what have you,
yep.
from the east to the west. And I just saw a sentence just to say something about Jordan Maxwell, which I learned quite a lot from him, but I must say some of his stuff is really interesting and accurate. But some isn't. Just this is my input on Jordan Maxwell stuff.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But I think he's right about that. Just
yes.
Because
yes. Yes.
They show the map, and it's like, oh, I never thought.
Yeah,
of that.
Yeah. It makes sense also. And it's also like this for thousands of years. I mean,
thousands of years. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why that was always. That's why the elite always kind of were in that area, whether
yeah.
it was Samaria or whether it was Babylon or Carthage
yeah.
or Tyre or Rome. It's all kind of in that middle area of that huge landmass. And, you know, we're the new world over here. So they didn't, you know, there was nothing over here really for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot over here, but they weren't over here.
Yeah, yeah.
Messing with us. And so so this is a big reason I really don't think Zionism has anything to do with Judaism. I think that what Jewish people have to be careful of is sort of this identifying with Zionism. And I do see that happening too often. And like, you know, like they'll say, I'm a secular Jew. Well, what does that mean? I mean, either you're Jewish or I'm not. How can you be a secular Christian? Or how can I be a secular Muslim? It's kind of a oxymoron. So what does that mean? And that's where you get into the dangerous territory of kind of Jewish identity.
Yes.
We're persecuted, or we're special, or we're different from you. And that's a really, that's what they want you to do. And they do the same thing over here with the evangelical Christians. You know,
right.
I mean, they're sort of the same way. They're Christian Zionists. I mean, they're basically funded by the same forces that funded Zionism, and they're really kind of, I think, hurting the Christian church, because they're the same way. They think they're more holy than I am, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, even if I'm Catholic, because they don't like the Catholics. But I think I just don't think Zionism has much of anything to do with Judaism. And the sooner we can get this across to people and start criticizing the Zionist project instead of the Jewish religion, which has nothing to do with it, I don't think. Nor does the Christian religion, nor does the Islamic religion. This is all, look, these people are Satanists, they're Luciferians. Their spiritual base comes from Lucifer, because they think they're the gods that were given the destiny through their royal bloodlines to lord over this earth as gods, small g.
Yeah.
And that's the way they act. And the Freemasonry and all this satanic stuff is sort of their fallback. It's naturally what a person's going to do if they've spent them and their family and their grandfather and their great-grandfather, if all you've done your whole life as this oligarchy is just do genocide and rape and pillage and steal people's resources and put it in your banks, then the only thing you can really fall back on is, you know, this Luciferian ideology, which justifies all of those bad things in some crazy way. Mm. And that's why they fall back on social Darwinism too and say, well, might is right. And that's just the way it is. They have to say that because that's what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes these philosophies and ways of thinking, it's not so much these high-minded events. It's just more like a rationalization.
Justification. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, the city of London, its main role is it's kind of this huge bullhorn, and it just tells us what to think. And whether it's in the field of archaeology, anthropology, economics, sociology, psychology, philosophy, it just tells us what to think. Through the Tavistock Institute, through the Royal Societies, whether it's the Geographic Society, the Astronomy Society, it says there was a Big Bang. How do we really know that's true at all? I mean, all this stuff is just constantly being, you know, told to us, and this is the crown talking. And so you have to decide, like, is this real?
Yeah, it's tricky. It's very tricky. I mean, to differentiate, to get the discernment between what is right information, truth-based, and what isn't. And it's really tricky because the social engineering is on a mass scale for many, many years now. And it's funny you mentioned the Tavistock Institution, because I was interviewing Harald Kautz-Vella a few days ago, and he spoke about the Tavistock Institution as a as an instrument for mass social engineering and playing with what information we get into our head and how we react to this information, etc. But it's funny enough because Tavistock Institute was established about the same time, I think it was 1917 or 1919, I mean also very early into 20th century, the same time the Balfour Declaration that you just mentioned, it's more or less at the same period.
Yes,
it's funny. I mean,
it's a very good point. This is all when it happened, and this is when they sat down at this round table and they said, well, okay, we're going to do this over here, Israel's going to be this, and then they said, well, the Warburg family, they're going to get you know, Deutsche Bank, and they're going to get sort of Eastern Europe and Hungary, and they said, well, Cecil Rhodes, we'll send him and the Oppenheimers, and they'll be our agents in Southern Africa to control the diamonds and the gold, and we'll send the Kuhn-Lobes and the Rockefellers and the Morgans to America, and they'll be our gophers over there and control that. We'll send the Bronfmans to Canada. They'll be our front men in Canada. Yeah, and on and on and on. Exactly. And it all came about at the same time. And the Federal Reserve had just been created. Yes. The Russian Revolution had just happened.
Yes.
And, oh, man, all the in this country, the federal income tax came into play, which was never ratified. We never voted for it. It just kind of came into play. And so at that point, the United States quit taxing these banking families based on tariffs, based on excise taxes of their goods coming into this country. And that's all it used to be. That's what used to fund this country. And they said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to give these big oligarch cartels. We're going to take the taxes off of them. We're going to put it on the middle class to an income tax.
Hang on, Dean. I get some extra sound from your mic or in my ears. I don't know what it's coming from. Can you say something?
Yeah, is it better?
No. Listen, I hang up and I call you immediately, all right?
We hit on something. Is it better?
No. No, by the way, I think normally when it happens after a bit, it's getting better. But I'll take this opportunity anyway. I wanted to say a couple of more things, if you don't mind. One thing is something I got in a website. I think I read it to you in one conversation. It's about Cecil Rhodes, and not just about him, but in this environment and in this time of the roundtable meeting, actually, what I got from a website an Israeli website called Conspil, which is cons like conspiracies IL, right? And it's a very very thorough website. I mean, the stuff that he puts out there, it's very similar. This is what draws me to you, because the type of information is similar, although you have a different look, which is cool. And really what he says there, and he gives some quotes of Cecil Rhodes and some others, that they never really wanted to establish Israel as a Jewish state. I mean, they did want to establish Israel, or to establish a place where the Israel or the Jewish people can go to, and they can control it and really control from there what happens in the Middle East. But they never intended it to be a Jewish state. Opposing them was Admond Rothschild, one of the Rothschild family, which obviously most of the Rothschild family, they were with Cecil Rhodes on that input, like, let's not create Israel as a Jewish state. But Admond Rothschild opposed them, and he put out, and he bought land, and he put out a lot of money and investment in buying land and promoting industry, agriculture, building, I wouldn't say cities, but building settlements and towns and villages for the new arrivals of the Jewish people from Europe. So they have things to do here, and places to live, and businesses to walk in, and land to walk on, and to grow, you know, olives and fruits and what have you. And all this because he really saw, and I think the way I see it, he is descendant of Jews or the Hebrew people, and he really saw it as a, like, he's on a mission from God or some sort of mission. And by doing so, he opposed all the rest of the Rothschild family as well as the round table members by not establishing, they didn't want to establish a Jewish state, but they did want to have an Israeli or a Jewish based community to stir up the environment in the Middle East. But thanks to Admond Rothschild, really the state of Israel, it was easier for her to rise up and to be established. This is one thing. Second thing, for most, maybe I'm wrong, I'm not sure, but for most Israelis, obviously the Jewish Israelis I'm talking about, not the Christian Israelis, not the Arab Israelis, but the Jewish Israelis, when you say Zionism, well, not you, me, anyone, when they hear the word Zionism, for them, it's what saved grandpa and grandma and their parents from the Holocaust. So for them, and I totally understand it, but you just need to understand, not you, but everyone, need to understand it in context. Because at that time, after the Second World War, Zionism was a good thing because it saved a lot of people from the Holocaust, from the camps in Germany, and it gave them hope. It gave them life, it gave them food, it gave them shelter, and so on. But for majority of people around the world, Zionism, when you say Zionism or Zionist, they immediately get a reaction which can be called anti-Semitic, because they have this reaction in them because of a lot of misinformation and disinformation, that Zionism or the Jews are to blame in many folds of what happened in the US, in the UK, in Germany, in Spain, and the Middle East and elsewhere. Now, of course, that the Israeli government and probably some of its branches like the Mossad and others, which I'm not aware of, for sure, you know, they are involved in some heavy stuff, because this is what governments and agencies like the Mossad, CIA, MI6, MI5, this is what they do. This is what they make a living from. But to take this and to blame all the Jewish people in Israel for the faults of Zionism, I think is wrong. It's taking it out of context and making a generalization for all these people. And I think it's not so wise to do if you want to advance humanity and your way of thinking, and to be in good place in your heart.
No, exactly. And that's hopefully what I articulated there. I think, and you know, I don't. I also think.
Wait, I get this extra sound from you. Such a shame, man. We had a very smooth connection till now.
Well, is it still there?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's right when we're kind of getting into a very important topic. Last time too, I think. Well,
hang on.
If we have to wrap it up, we could.
Yeah, I know, but hang on, I'll disconnect and I call you once again, but please be with what you wanted to say, because I want to hear it and I want it to be broadcasted, all right? So I'll hang up and I call you again, or maybe you hang up and you call me.
Let me call you? Okay, yeah. I'll call you.
Great,
I'll
thanks. You. Excellent, thanks. אז יש קצת רעשים, there's a bit noises on the line, and here we go. Dean?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now it's
Is it
good.
Better?
Yes, now it's good. Go ahead.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think that's right, Shai. I think it's really counterproductive. Like I said before, you know, you can't really, it's counterproductive to talk about religions and to talk about countries, and it all comes down to the crown. It all comes down to this round table and what they wanted certain places to be for their interest. And so everybody needs some humility in this, and everybody needs to know that their government is working for these guys, because every government, with the exception of very few, is plugged in through globalization and technology and trade and capitalism. They're all spokes in the wheel of this global oligarchy. At least the leadership of these governments has nothing to do with the people, has nothing to do with religion. And yeah, it's all about the round table. This is when the noise started coming, was I was talking about the income tax.
Wait, and I'm sorry, I get this extra sound.
Okay.
And I call you again.
All right. Is it 2G or 3G? No. Better?
Yes, go on.
Is it better? Yeah. All right. So yeah. And on the note of Zionism, where, you know, you say a lot of Israelis think of Zionism as a good word, and I understand it. I understand it, but I think Israelis have to realize that the whole thing was made up.
Yeah.
You know, that Zionism was there because Hitler was there, and they are backing all of it. And, you know, so they want you to have a warm, fuzzy feeling about having a Jewish state.
Mm.
But it's kind of weird, because there's no Christian states in the world, and there's no Muslim states in the world, but there's this Jewish state. And so this is what I mean about sort of identifying it yourself as sort of this Jewish identity, or sort of like, you know, we really are God's chosen people, and we're persecuted, and we're, you know, we're special. Because if you do that, you're just being like the crown. And Americans do it too. And they say, oh, my country or no country, or my, you know, and they do it too. And it's stupid. It's all stupid. So you can't be chauvinistic about your country being better, or your religion being better, or, you know, you can't. The Jewish identity thing is dangerous, and the Jewish secular thing is dangerous. You know, Jewish is great, Christian is great, do what you want, none of my business. But when you start identifying, and you know, and so the whole Jewish state idea, I do think it's part of the problem, because it just creates friction, tension, you know, with neighbors in that region. So, and I think it was by design. I think it was set up that way. So I would argue that this Rothschild who said it should be a Jewish state, maybe he was the bad guy. And maybe Rhodes had it right, and it shouldn't have been a Jewish state. And then the Jews could live there in peace, along with the Christians, along with the Muslims, and I think
we never know. I mean,
this is again a part of the creation of a religious war that doesn't have to exist. You know, everybody's just people. There's good people, 95% of them, and then there's this little clique of oligarchs that you know turn people against each other. And so I would just urge Israelis and Americans and Brits and Iranians and everybody just to know that and just not to. To think that in any way, you know, like Iran and Israel aren't enemies. It's just that the New World Order bankers said they have to create these two enemies to accomplish their longer-term objective in the Middle East region, which may involve some sort of rolling out a Solomon's Temple in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be a satanic temple, and it's probably going to be run by the Habsburgs, who are not Jews, they are Satanists. So this is another thing Israelis have to be really beware of, is that their country, your country, may very well be used as sort of this final place where they run the New World Order out of Israel. And a lot of it just has to do with geographic location, like we talked about before.
And so, spiritual heritage, I mean, or religious heritage of the past, of the old world.
That's what they'll cloak it in.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But it's Satanism. It's Satanism, and it's Babylon. It's a Babylon. They're not, you know. So that's what. Anyway, I think that's the thing to remember is that, you know, we have to unite. We can't consider ourselves, you know. I was raised Catholic, but I don't, you know. I just try to get along with everybody, and I think that's what everybody needs to start doing is just getting along with everybody. And I think the only way we're going to do that is if we identify this the perpetrator of all these sort of fantasies and these feel-good solutions and these genocides and these race wars, religious wars, and get that identify, like, who's behind all this? Why are they doing it? Does it do me any good? Does it do you any good to go there? No, you're right. It's counterproductive. It does no good. It doesn't create any good thing. Mm-hmm. But if we can rise above that and talk about it at that next level, then we can all get somewhere, and everybody has to do it. Everybody.
You know, I some of what you say I take, but I have to say that I disagree with some of what you said a couple of minutes ago. I do think, well, we cannot take the clock back or whatever happened, but since I live here and my family lives here, you know, I do think that the establishment of Israel as a Jewish state also did some good things, at least for myself and my family and obviously a few other millions of Jewish who live here. And I do think that it serves a purpose for us. I'm just talking in the simplest level. I'm not talking crown, I'm not talking government, I'm talking people, I'm talking human's life, you know? And without even going into discussion if and how much the Jewish people were, I forgot the word, Hitler, for example, tried to exterminate us and he killed a lot of Jewish people. I mean, it's a fact, although there's some who claim it didn't and it never happened. It's a well-known fact and you can find a lot of evidence for it. So and we just tomorrow it's the Holocaust Day, you know, it's the Memorial Day for the Holocaust in Israel. It's funny that we speak about it. I never thought about it, but you see there's a link here. And so I disagree with what you say, because I do think the establishment of Israel for us, for the people, it's something very good. Although, in the same breath, I take what you say, and within the context of Zionism and the crown agenda, as well as the bankers and all the other evildoers, I do agree that we as people, as Jewish people who live here, we are actually were given the opportunity to break free from this. We just need to learn to do our homework, you know, to learn really what's going on here. And not because we're Jewish, it's true also for American and for British, for everyone on this planet, you know, to learn who are we, what is our heritage and where we are going to, and to understand that there's a huge, strong force that is not aiming to do us any good. And funny enough, I told you I did an interview like an hour before. I did an interview with Mark Steele from England, and he's involved in the 5G. I will send you the link once I put it up. And you know what's funny? I asked him about, because he's coming from really a professional background, right? About the 5G and technologies and weapons, etc. And I asked him about, and this is also something for you to know, because it's to do also with your field of expertise. When I tell people stuff about what we speak, about the crown, the city of London, etc., and they can discharge it as a conspiracy theory, right? So I told Mark Steele, what you have to say to those people who think the 5G story is just a conspiracy theory. And really, at the end of the day, just the upgrade of 4G. It's a new technology, it's to improve our connection, the Internet of Things, virtual reality, blah, blah, blah. And he told me, you know, 2 years ago, if you ask me this question, I would probably answer differently. But now, I can tell you, definitely, it's a Luciferian plan. It's a devilish agenda to exterminate biology, life, here on the planet. And he said there's no doubt about it, because to use these types of weapons in neighborhoods, in houses, on peoples, on plants, on other animals, this is, whoever is doing it, he has to be against God, or against, never mind whose God is it, but against good, against life. And to do so, you have to have a very specific evil agenda to do so. And he says, everything I say, what he says, is based on facts. I mean, for my profession, I know what this radar system or what this antenna can actually do and what harm it can cause. So I'm telling you, implementing it in neighborhoods and houses, it's to kill people.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. It's to kill people.
And the next important thing to know is that it is the crown behind it.
Yes.
Via Circa.
Yeah, I told him about it. I told him about you and your posts. And yeah, yes.
Well, what's been happening in the last couple of weeks here is, like, there's been the circling of the wagons, you know. Like, I did an interview with the InPower folks, and David Icke made me a contributing editor on his site. And now Sasha Stone wants to interview me.
Sasha Stone is the one who did the 5G apocalypse.
This is what we need to do, is circle the wagons right now and put everything we know, because we each have different specialties, fields, put it together. Because if we don't know who the enemy is that's firing this weapon, man, how are you going to win the war? I mean, if you go into a war, if you go into a battlefield and you look around, you don't even know who the enemy is, who do you shoot at? Who do you know? You know, who do you point the finger at? Who do you take out? Well, I'm telling you that these are the people we need to take out, one way or the other. I don't care how we do it.
Yeah.
But this is our enemy. This is the enemy of the Jewish people, the Christian people, the Muslim people, the Israeli people, the American people, the Burkina Faso people. I don't care where you live. You're a human being. You're a beautiful creature. And these people think we have no souls, and they're evil, and they use us like commodities, and trade us like commodities, and treat us like cattle, and have been doing this for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
And now they want to get rid of most of us with 5G. And so it just makes perfect sense that this is who's behind it. And I found the smoke and guns circle. And by the way, the police van that picked up Julian Assange said Serco on the side. It wasn't a police van. It was a Serco van.
Did it actually say Serco on the van?
Go back to the RT footage. I saw it on RT, but wherever you can see the footage of the van that took him away, and it said Serco. Because they also run all the prisons and all the detention centers in the UK, the immigration system, which is allowing this immigrant bomb to be let in, which is probably being used to run drugs, because they control the immigration. They control the radar systems and the air traffic control of all the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, that whole area, GCC, where they run a lot of drugs through there. They control the detention centers in Australia. They control the driver's license offices, the vaccination records, military records, and all the communications in the United States called Federal Bridge between, among our government. They do security for NSA, FBI, CIA, Air Force, Army, Navy. They're in a position where they know everything. It's all about data, and they have it. And they have a pathology lab in the UK. And this is why they have, because they're going to do the kill program and they want to know how it's progressing. And this is the crown. The queen has the golden chair. They're close to Lockheed Martin and BAE, the two companies, biggest defense contractors in the world. It's a military grade weapon, as Mark Steele told you. You can't tell me this is not the nail in the coffin for humanity. This is the final solution.
He says, listen, he showed me the book on the video. You probably know this book, Hitler's Secret Weapons. Do you know this book, Hitler's Secret Weapons? No. He said this book is written by, what's his name, Chamberlain something. I forgot. He told me the name, but I'm going to buy it and read it. He says this 5G weapon has been started to be developed in the, I think it was in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go on. Well, I was just going to interject there. It was RCA Corporation that had it, and it was radar and sonar. They invented radar and sonar, and they invented the telegraph, the wireless, with Marconi and all that stuff.
Yes.
Well, guess where Serco comes from? RCA.
Yes.
GE and Serco come out of RCA, and General Electric is the one doing all the smart meters, all the light, the LED light fixtures and bulbs where the 5G is going to be implemented. So this is a crown project. All this comes together, and yes, it's very old. And yes, Hitler was privy to it because Hitler was a crown project too.
Yeah, sure. We spoke about it.
This can all be seen in that way. It needs to be seen in this way. And you can call it. They can call it conspiracy theory. Whoever wants to. I've done research on this for 40 years, and it's like, how many footnotes does a guy need? They created the word conspiracy theory, the CIA. Yeah. And Gore Vidal said. Gore Vidal said, I'm an observer of conspiracies. That's what I am. I'm an observer. I'm telling you all this ridiculous shit that these guys are doing because they're doing it. Mm. Not because I'm crazy and making it up. Because they're actually doing it. And you cannot imagine how evil these people are and how they do look at us as these sort of cattle that they can herd around and just take out a million of us when they need to over here. Bomb Libya and Afghanistan, send all the people into Europe, create chaos, starve Honduras and Guatemala out and prop up these dictatorships. And then all they flood across the border here. And just order out of chaos, baby. Freemason, credo. And it is their spiritual grounding. Freemasonry is their spiritual guidance. And it's Luciferian, purely Luciferian. Everything's upside down. You lie all the time. They teach their people to lie and play head games with people and manipulate people and how to do it. And this is where all this stuff comes from. And we got to turn it off and we got to get real and we got to connect these dots and come together, which is happening. So that also tells me that we're at the end here. When people start coming together like I've seen the last couple weeks here happening, finally, because people... people are busy, people have egos, but now people are freaking out.
Sure.
Now people are going, holy smokes, man.
There's no more time. You cannot postpone stuff. You have to react now.
Get on the team, join the team, you work together, and what we have to
do. I ask Mark.
On it and equal.
I ask.
Because that's a different model from their pyramid structure, and we don't want nothing to do with that.
I asked Mark Steele, what can people do? And he just said, join the resistance, baby.
That's it.
You cannot avoid it anymore. That's it. It's time to act.
You have.
Yes. Also, I saw something on Facebook today. Somebody wrote the term herd immunity, from vaccines, says it all about how they look at us, like a herd.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is one thing.
They even call it that.
Yes, they say it in our face. Yes. And also something you said made me think of Bill Cooper. He used to say that you cannot join the battlefield if you don't know who your enemy is, if you don't know where he's hiding, if you don't know what the weapons he's using against you. You better don't even go to the battlefield if you don't know these things. You better stay here and you do your homework, and only after you can go to the battlefield and do your duties and what you have to do to protect yourself, your family, your children, your offsprings. Listen, I will send Mark Steele the post you wrote about Serco, the 5G, right?
That'd be good. I don't have his email. If you do have it, do send him.
I will send him. I'm in touch with him, and I'm thinking even to do a joint interview with you and him, even like 2 hours. You know, like we can do it. I was thinking about it today, but I thought, no, it's not fair for you. I need to prepare both of you before doing so.
Yeah. It's better next time down the road. But, yeah, that'd be great. Because he's – I really like him. He's not only is he professional and he's got the military background and he's got the technical background, but he's got balls. He's got audacity.
Listen.
That's what I like about him, and that's why they're harassing him.
Exactly.
Because that combination, they don't like it.
No.
You can have balls, but not the knowledge.
Exactly.
They'll let you go. You can have the knowledge or all the balls.
Exactly.
The girly boy and go away. But if you got both, they're troubled by him, and they're troubled by me, and they're troubled by these kind of people because they don't ever know what we're going to do.
You now you hit the nail on its head, because I tell you, before I contacted him today, I told Alit, my wife, I told her, listen, if I can interview him, that's great. And she was like, who is he? And I was like, doesn't matter now, but he has these huge balls, you know? And I told him during the interview, during the Skype chat with him, I told him what I just told you now about telling my wife, that he has like really big balls to do what he's doing and to go against, you know, he went to court with them, and he says that maybe next week he will be in prison. He's not sure. Maybe they put him in prison. He's hoping they won't, but you know, he's doing what he can. But I absolutely agree with you. He has the knowledge, he has the background, and he has the balls, and that's what makes him dangerous, you know.
That's right. That's what we all need.
Yes, absolutely. And we need these joint forces, and to put these panels, and to put the information out more, you know, more the more the merrier, the better, the sooner, better for everyone. Also, I will try and fix like a meeting maybe next week with you and him, and we can do something like that. I think it can be really interesting. Just to have you both on board, I will send you the link to his just to the interview we had, and I will send him the link to your article, because he should see it. I told him about you and the article about Serco and the crown, etc. I think it will be very interesting for him to see the links that you put out there. It's really cool. Listen, Dean, as always, it's a pleasure, man.
Yeah, man, you too, Sean. I think we did good today. Hopefully we unified people today. That's always what I want to do, is unify people. Because, look, there's just a tiny few of these crown parasites, Satanists. There's just a tiny few of them. And if we can just unify and have that awareness and that unity, that's what it's going to take to just crush these parasites. And that's what we need to do. So,
and I can tell, hang on. I can tell, especially to the Israeli audience, because we touched some, you know, sensitive subjects maybe to some of them.
Sure.
I just want to say, remember, the real enemy, at least for now, locally, is the government. It's not our neighbor. Love thy neighbor, but the government is actually giving us the bad time, and it's true for UK, for US, for every country. It's the government who is giving us the hard time, not our fellow humans. Just remember that. And thank you very much, Dean, for everything you do and all the information and data you put out there. And hopefully I'll catch you next week, man.
Sounds good. Sounds good, brother. You take it easy, all right?
Cheers, you too. Take care, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, man.
Bye.